This uncertain landscape has inspired our conversation to get to the other side. Sure, we want to get there, but can we move in a way that's woven deeply with ourselves, each other, and the deepest threads of the fabric of existence? In this episode, Melissa Locke stirs up some wonderings about what love might look like on the other side.
Hey everyone, I'm Melissa Locke, and this is episode 8 of our Fabric podcast conversation to get to the other side. I have loved all the different Fabric voices from the community that have shared other compelling and public voices that really help us envision better ways of putting this world together on the other side of this pandemic and this moment of monumental change. I've really needed their hopeful visions and their practicable ideas as I try to find my own way and my own role and honestly just keep going. I've also really appreciated, even though it's hard to hear, how honest they've all been that there are no easy answers, quick fixes, or guaranteed outcomes. This is hard. If I'm honest, even when I think of just my own seemingly small circle of influence, I often wonder, how long can I sustain this? How long can we sustain this? How will we last to help see and experience and make the change that we hope for? This is the question that author, filmmaker, attorney, and civil rights activist Valerie Kaur was asking at one of her lowest points. And like the Beatles and many a yard sign, the answer she discovered eventually is, you got it, love. Yeah, love. Before you take off your headphones, I want to ask you a question. What is your working understanding of that word, love? Do you have one? Is it one that you can actually practice and talk about and model for our kids? Is it one that can apply even when you're at your lowest points? Is it one that stands up in the face of circumstances that seem utterly impossible? Or people that feel wholly unlovable? I probably thought I had one, and maybe I did. Maybe it was decent. But what I hear in Valerie's voice for us today is a working picture of love as the radical, joyful game changer that it truly is and that we so often miss. It is a picture that helps me see how we can last. And she does it by offering us a new but age-old metaphor. I was introduced to Valerie Kaur by two people who, though they don't know it, have been enormous teachers, models, and reminders to me of game-changing love. They've done it through their books, their music, and now their podcast called The Growing Edge. This is Parker Palmer and singer, songwriter, artist, and educator Carrie Newcomer. They featured Valerie in an episode this June to talk about Valerie's new book, which is called See No Stranger, a memoir and manifesto of revolutionary love. You will want to hear the whole thing. Make sure to listen. The link will be on our episode page. But here's the tail end of Parker Palmer's introduction of Valerie. He is clearly a great admirer. I think you will be too.
I'll just say one more thing before we welcome Valerie to the podcast. On Watch Night, also known as New Year's Eve, in 2016, after the general election of that year, Valerie was in Washington, D.C. at the Metropolitan AME Church on stage with Jim Forbes of Riverside Church and the Reverend William Barber. And she gave a really, really remarkable address. I think one of the, I think in our time, one of the great speeches made in this country, in which she reflected deeply and personally on the darkness that was descending upon America, the night that was descending upon our country. And she was, of course, deeply personal about it. She talked about a man she called Uncle, who was the first person assassinated after 9/11 because someone thought he was one of the perpetrators. And she talked about her young son, a brown boy, who would be growing up in a society that is very dangerous to children of color. And as she worked her way through this description of the times in which we live, she looked up and she said, "But is it possible that this is not the darkness of the tomb, but the darkness of the womb?"
Is it possible that this is not the darkness of the tomb, but the darkness of the womb? Do you hear the call from the other side? It is out of that statement that Valerie's voice began captivating people from all across political, class, religious, racial, ethnic, gender, and cultural identities. Listen next to Valerie describe what she believes, and I believe, is the call of our time. As people who choose not fear, but trust in that which is deeply woven into the fabric of existence, in the face of uncertainty, loss, and pain. Here she is.
In order for me to last, I needed to figure out how to root my life and my activism not just in the energy of outrage, but in the ethic of love and the practice of love. And I began to realize that, you know, we live in a culture that teaches us that love is just this flood of emotion, something romantic that feels good. We fall in love as if we're falling into a jar of honey. And I really do love romantic love. Like, it is one of the great joys in life. But it's only a tiny spectrum of what we understand to be love as an ethic. And I thought back to all the spiritual teachers through history, the social reformers, even just caregivers, and how we know that love is more than a feeling. Love is sweet labor, fierce, bloody, imperfect, life-giving. It is a choice we make over and over again. And when we choose to love beyond what evolution requires, when we choose to love beyond our own kin, when we love others who do not look like us, when we love even our opponents, when we love ourselves who we too often neglect, then love becomes revolutionary. And so I started to realize and speak into the call of revolutionary love as the call of our times.
Let's hear that again. When we choose to love beyond our own kin, others who do not look like us, even our opponents and ourselves who we too often neglect, then love becomes revolutionary. And then she describes love as labor, sweet, messy, and yes, hard labor. Love is not a saccharine kind of niceness or romantic feeling that just happens to us, that we fall into or out of. It's a choice that we can make, and not just when it's easy. Are you beginning to see how this can be game-changing? You know, this is stuff that we know deep down, and yet I wonder if this representation of love can really change things for us. Listen to Valerie say more about what she sees as possible when we understand love this way. Take your own deep breath and listen for what could be game-changing for you as you look and work forward toward the other side.
If we think about love as labor, as action, it can be taught, it can be modeled, it can be practiced. And when we think about love as labor, it's not any one emotion. In fact, it engages all of our emotions. Joy is the gift of love. Grief is the price of love. Anger protects that which is loved. And when we think we have reached our limit, then wonder returns us to love. And so when we think about love in this way, then we begin to honor and engage and harness all of the entire spectrum of human emotions in that labor of love. And I think that is helping me quite a bit right now when there's so much to be angry about or there's so much to grieve, to understand how inhabiting our emotions and grieving together and raging together and breathing together and pushing together, that all of that is part of the labor of love.
Joy is the gift of love. Grief is the price of love. Anger protects that which is loved. And when we think we have reached our limits, wonder returns us to love. Whew, that feels so helpful to me. It reminds me of what I know, but somehow forget or don't quite hold on to. Love in action doesn't require you to deny joy, to move on from grief, to suppress your anger or turn off your sense of awe and wonder in order to stay on some righteous path. No, these very real and human emotions are not only allowed, they are honored, needed, and harnessed for the work of love. I also found her first point so helpful, that love in action, when you think about it this way, it can be taught. It can be modeled and practiced. It isn't something you have or don't have, feel or don't feel, fall in or out of, or ever perfect. We get to choose, to practice, to forget, to remember again, and discover love together. So this interview with Valerie was recorded just before the murder of George Floyd. I found it terribly prophetic that they chose to focus so heavily on the idea of rage being part of love. Here's Parker Palmer.
The fact that you do not exclude from love anger and rage, just to put it plainly, a lot of people who are on a spiritual path, who wish to be good people, feel somehow that anger and rage are taboo, and they're a sign that you've fallen off the wagon. I don't feel that way myself. Carrie doesn't feel that way herself. But for me, at least, it's been a journey to get there. In my case, as a person who was raised Christian, to understand that my own tradition has a lot of validation of anger in it, prophetic speech. You know, the prophets weren't Hallmark card people, but that's a piece of our tradition that gets buried for the sake of, quote, making nice. I'd love to hear your reflections about the role of anger and even rage.
Yes, Parker, I'd like to tell you a story that will give you my answer to this. A few months ago, before the pandemic, my parents had taken my son to a concert, and my son, who was 4 years old, was sitting on my father's shoulder, just on top of the world. And on their way home, they decided they would take a ferry to cross the bay to come home. And as they were waiting for the ferry to come, they heard an irate voice. There was a woman who was in an argument with the ferry conductor. And my father, who was ever trying to be helpful, stepped in and said, "Can I help you? You can go around this way if you can't wait for the ferry." And the woman just spun around, took one look at my father and said, "Go back to the country you came from." And my father, who's hard of hearing, had to have my son lean down and tell my father what the woman had said. So my parents come home totally devastated, and I say, "Well, didn't anyone say anything?" And they said, "Well, no, there was a crowd of people, but no one said anything, just like last time when the slur was suicide bomber, or the time before that when the slur was sand nigger." And that night, as I put my son to sleep, I remember asking him, "You know, where do you feel the sadness in your body?" And he pointed to his belly, and I kissed his belly, and he felt better, and he was starting to fall asleep. And my mind started racing. I could feel my heart beating fast. I could feel my fists clench. It was rage just coursing through my body. wanting to protect my parents, wanting to protect my son, having all of these tools, even now, like working in the field of calling for love and still feeling so helpless. And suddenly, as my mind is just going on and on, I'm thinking the president has said, go back to your country. These are the words that precede acts of violence and all the hate crimes I've ever documented. My parents and my son were lucky today. And as my mind was racing like this, suddenly my son puts his ear on my mouth and says, Mommy, I not hear you breathing. I said, oh. And so I started to take deep breaths. And then he says, breathe and push, Mommy. Oh. All this time, I had no idea my son knew my work in the world, knew my words in the world, and here he was giving my own tools back to me. And I thought, oh my God, my son has become my midwife.
Breathe and push, Mommy. Ah, that story. Oh, I hear that understandable anger. And I also hear, as a mom, her grief. I bet all of us do, for the world that her son is growing up in. What do we do with our grief and our anger? They go on to talk in this conversation about the importance of feeling our rage. So many of us are taught to suppress it until it explodes either our insides or outside of us onto others, hardening into depression, shame, and hate. In order to avoid our rage from hardening like that, we need safe containers for expressing these big feelings. We've learned this before, but this is such an important and needed reminder. Valerie's son gave her that container where she could safely express her rage and feel it and process it to keep it from hardening inside her or spilling out onto others. He gave her a container when he reminded her to breathe and push. So Parker Palmer brought this story up again later when he asked Valerie about a big idea in her book.
The first section is called See No Strangers, : Loving Others. Does that include the woman on the boat who said words to your father that caused me to have an elevated heartbeat when you were telling the story, and in truth, to stop breathing? How do we see no strangers when people act in a way that can be called strange only charitably?
Love is dangerous business. That's what my grandfather used to say. Love is dangerous business. For if you choose to see no stranger, then that means seeing everybody, even that woman at the boat, as a sister, a brother, a sibling. It means to look upon the face of anyone and anything around you and say to yourself, you are a part of me I do not yet know. And that means if you are a part of me I do not yet know, then I must choose to wonder about you even if you do not wonder about me. And in that way, I choose to love you even if you put me in danger. And I will choose to protect you even when you are lashing out in hate at me. So I was raised with this kind of orientation, this radical orientation to love all others, even my opponents. And yet that orientation to wonder, that orientation to love, was also an orientation to walk the path of social justice. Because if all others are part of me, then I must protect others as if they were my own family. I must pick up my metaphoric sword and shield to fight the good fight, to become a warrior sage. In the Sikh tradition, it's called Sant Sipahi. The warrior fights, the sage loves. So I took it as a path of revolutionary love. But the key is to fight in such a way that does not destroy our opponents, but invites them into transformation. And that means, yes, we must remove bad actors from power, but our true goal is to reorder the cultures and institutions that radicalize our opponents. So I have to think about who that woman is listening to on the radio. What is she reading? What is she hearing in her church? What are the norms and policies of the institutions that she moves in that makes her feel like white supremacy is something that is that she needs in order to find worth and belonging in this country? And once I begin to be curious, once I begin to wonder even about her and what has wired her to respond that way, then I can fight in a smarter way. And this is the key. Loving our opponents is not just moral. It is strategic. It is pragmatic. It is how we choose the more effective and efficient campaigns and policies and strategies in order to enact cultural and institutional change and not just go after individuals.
This is where I really begin to see the power of this new metaphor to help us actually make progress and move toward another side. Revolutionary love is a fight of sorts, yes, but it's not to make other people lose. Where does that take us anyway? We fight, we labor for something new to be born in and for all of us. Others, ourselves, and our opponents. Valerie says, "You are part of me that I do not yet know. I will choose to wonder about you." Oh, that sounds like hard labor, especially when you hear her story and understand it in that context. But we are all invited into that labor. Carrie Newcomer reflects on the power of the metaphor of labor and birth and launches into the last part of their conversation that I will be sharing here. You will want to hear more. Our episode page will have a link to this whole conversation from The Growing Edge, as well as Valerie's powerful TED Talk and her recent virtual book release event. You may hear all this and wonder if you have a role in helping a new kind of world be born. Is Valerie talking to you? Does this metaphor of labor and birth include you? Yes. As Greg shared in one of our previous episodes, the you are is needed.
Coming around to this idea again of breathing and pushing, you know, a very female metaphor too, and claiming birth as a powerful metaphor for change and transformation. They call it transition for a reason, you know, and that we are in a time right now when of enormous change, you know, we can only move forward. We can't go back at this point. And so the idea of breathing and pushing and of action that is then balanced with time to be with safe sanctuary, with friends, with those you love, to be able to express freely. Just this back and forth of love for others, but also love for self. It's just an amazing metaphor. It claims something and it also describes something so well. Thank you.
Oh, I think, you know, it has been medicine for myself. It's been how I've been able to last, and I'm so happy and grateful that it's useful to you and to others. Transition is the final stage in birthing labor. It is the most painful and dangerous stage. It's where the body opens up to 10 centimeters, contractions are less than a minute apart, there's barely time to breathe between them. It feels like dying, and yet it is a stage that precedes the birth of new life. And having undergone that experience, I began to think about birthing and transition as metaphor. I thought about how metaphors of war have been universally shared for so long. When we say, you know, fight the good fight or become a warrior, we all know what that means. It's the courage that's needed to fight for what's right. So too, I began to think about why we don't use metaphors of birthing universally for all of us who are in the midst of many different creative labors. The labor of raising a family or making a life or building a movement or rebirthing a nation. That I think the mechanics of birthing and that kind of courage to try to create something new can be available to all of us, that it is not a biological right, but it is a human right to tap into that wellspring of caregiving and laboring that all of us are capable of. And so being able to invite people into all of us being midwives for a nation yet to be born, it has been an empowering way to invite people to think about a way to fight for justice, to labor for justice in a way that is sustainable. Because the midwife doesn't say breathe once and push the rest of the way. No, she says breathe and then push and then breathe again. And so I have to ask myself, as I ask others, how are you breathing every day? Who are you breathing with? And then how are you pushing? What is your particular role in this great labor? Because every single one of us has a role. And revolutionary love as a framework is a way to invite everyone to imagine what their role might be. Is it your job to step up and love others in solidarity right now? Is it your job to reach across lines of difference and try to love your opponents? Is it your job to teach us how to love ourselves? All of us have a role in the labor of revolutionary love.
2020. And we're just over halfway through. So what will be born on the other side of this time because of how we've labored together, you and I and all those who are part of us that we do not yet know? What will be born while we labor together? Valerie Kaur says, "I've come to believe that laboring in joy is the meaning of life. It returns us to everything that is good and worth fighting for." Revolutionary love happens when people come together to practice laboring in joy, breathing and pushing, breathing and pushing. So let's practice. I think this is a way that we can both work for the world we want on the other side and live in it together right now. So here's your three questions for the week. What might your role be now in this labor of revolutionary love toward yourself and to others? How are you breathing every day? And who are you breathing with? May we be and hear that reminder for one another, especially when it gets hard. Breathe and push, breathe and push. Love is all you need.
It's worth keeping this conversation going. Share this podcast with a friend, and you can find resources for discussions and other notes about this episode at our website, fabricmpls.com. You can also go to our contact page or reach out to us on social media to share your feedback and experiences, because Fabric isn't an organization sharing novel ideas. It's a community of people becoming more deeply woven. Thanks for being part of it.